thank you, gracious Lord, that we can work together to find that which you have revealed that makes it so that we understand the equipment better that you've entrusted to our care. Help us to be earnest and serious students that we may have more knowledge with which we can care for ourselves, our families, and in our mission work. Help us to be very effective health missionaries, health educators, so that the world is better for our having been in it. Now give us the guidance and leadership of your Holy Spirit as we study. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Cardiovascular disease is the subject for this afternoon, and I'm always amazed at how much there is. So the big problem is, what do I leave out? We can't cover it all. Cardiology, a doctor who is getting a specialty in cardiology may spend 2 years or more learning to be a cardiologist. So you will not be cardiologists at the end of this class, but hopefully you will be a lot more knowledgeable than you were when you came in, especially in the practical parts. And if you will learn what we go over this afternoon, you will know more practical things that you personally can do than most cardiologists. Now that may seem strange to you, but most cardiologists, although it is available, most of the information that I have came off the web or from medical journals. And so it's available to everybody. But if you're not tuned toward getting those things that are natural, you will overlook them totally. You won't even see them. And so while they're there, cardiologists usually don't look where I'm looking. There are also some very wonderful databases that are available. One is James Duke, and I think it may be just www.jamesduke. But if you just type in James Duke, you should be able to get to his website. It may also be under the name of Green Pharmacy. Green Pharmacy. He was for 38 years with the Department of Agriculture with the U.S. government studying medicinal herbs, largely, as his work there. And now he works privately. He's retired. And almost anything of a nutritional nature that you want from to learn about foods or herbs or garden plants or plants of the Amazon, he was particularly interested in that and has spent many, many months in the Amazon studying various plants there. And he has a garden in Maryland, and I've been there several times being inspired by his plants and also by the man. He attends his garden barefoot. And once in a while he gets a thorn in his foot, but he's a very engaging speaker because of the great wealth of knowledge that he has, and you can access his databases on a number of topics. If you would like to know sources of lycopene or sources of myo-inositol for diabetic neuropathy, just log on and you will find page after page after page of information on any topic that you're looking for. Osteoporosis, go to his site and you will find a database of foods and herbal subjects that will help you to know how you yourself can work with these, with foods and herbal products to fashion your own diet. You may have heard of designer diets. Designer diets are diets that you design for a special illness or for a special nutrient that you may need, or to avoid a certain nutrient, such as gluten, or some food, such as tomatoes if you're sensitive to them, or whatever. So I'm hoping that as we work this afternoon, you will learn some things that will help you and your neighbors and your missionary contacts to have better health. Notice this first topic that I'll talk about in cardiovascular diseases. This is natural anticoagulants, and there are many of them. Notice this, of course, to stay well hydrated, that this would be very reasonable, that it would help to keep the blood thin, and so it does not coagulate easily inside your blood vessels. And that is true. It is staying well hydrated is a very profitable thing. How well hydrated do you need to be? Can you be overhydrated? Yes, but it's a little difficult if you drink enough water that your urine has no color at all. You may be drinking too much. And you're maybe washing out your B vitamins so that you don't have enough to enjoy the best of health, because your B vitamins may get low. But if you have very dark urine, you can be pretty certain you're not drinking enough water. If you have chapped lips, the same. If you do not produce enough saliva, the same. If you wake up at night coughing because of a dry throat, it very well may be that you're not drinking enough water. There are some people who have a naturally dry mouth. Called the dry mouth syndrome and the dry eye syndrome, and their cases are special, but even they can benefit from having a large amount of water, drinking a large amount of water. One study was published in the medical literature showing that if a person who has to get up at night for the bathroom will drink from 5 to 8 ounces of water during the night, that it reduces their risk of stroke by 67%. That's an amazing number, isn't it? Just staying well hydrated. So I present that to you as something that's very, very important for you. Now, exercise, also very important, and I'll mention that many times during the afternoon. It affects fibrinogen. And most of you will know that fibrinogen is a component of a clot. And it favorably affects a clot. So you become less likely to clot your blood inside your blood vessels if you get plenty of exercise. How much exercise does a person need? It depends a lot on the individual and how vigorously should they approach it. Again, it depends on the individual, and nobody can tell you ahead of time exactly how much exercise is what you need. But almost all the cardiologists are agreed that 20 minutes a day of fairly vigorous exercise would be adequate to keep you from getting a heart attack, at least from that particular standpoint. That may not be enough for some other things. If you have depression, that may not be enough. You may need a lot more. If you have osteoporosis, you may need different kinds. You may need all kinds. Weight-bearing, you may need stretching exercises. All kinds of exercise you may need, and varied perhaps from day to day. Some may need to be taken daily, but some of the same ones to build up muscle strength, but other things may need to be done periodically, such as stretching. And to eat generously of fruits and vegetables, I cannot overemphasize that most fruits and vegetables have natural anticoagulants in them. Do not overdo the calcium. That can increase your clotting potential. And if you have to be sitting for a long period of time, there are a number of things that you can do to prevent clotting of your blood inside your blood vessels. And one of those is simply taking a deep breath. Just breathing deeply or yawning. And a yawn can be generated by most people except those who have schizophrenia. And so I always feel comfortable in a class when there are people yawning. Tomorrow we'll be talking about emotional and mental illnesses. Most of us, including myself, have people in the family that you have had experience with, personal experience with, who have been mentally ill. And those who have had mentally ill people in the family understand the difficulties of having emotional or mental problems. They can people can be very uncomfortable, even with a neurosis, which is the simplest of the problems that people have of an emotional or mental nature. But isometrics, with nobody's knowing that you're doing it, you can tighten and relax a muscle. Do it right now. Tighten and relax a muscle. So if you're on a transoceanic flight and you have been immobile for a number of hours, you can greatly reduce your potential for getting a flight clot by simply doing isometrics, just contracting a muscle right where it is. And breathing deeply, we should do that for many things, but of course for preventing coagulation of the blood inside the blood vessels. Now some more. Foods with antiplatelet stickiness factors. Maybe you didn't know until yesterday when I talked about it a bit that there are foods that have antiplatelet stickiness factors. What are platelets? Are they blood cells? Most hematologists don't classify them as blood cells. They are at least fragments of a blood cell. The megakaryocytes in the bone marrow make them or spin them off. Maybe they are cells. They are little bodies in the blood that are essential to the clotting process. They get sticky, and their stickiness, under many circumstances, they can get sticky. And the stickiness can cause them to initiate a small clot. When a small clot is initiated, it tends to propagate or to grow. And so you can get, from sticky platelets, you can get a full-blown clot. So there are a number of things. Notice these. Garlic. Now, some of you who read medical journals will recognize immediately that medical journals have carried articles both pro and con concerning garlic. I remember one of the first ones having to do with hypertension. A physician wrote a letter to the editor saying that garlic had no benefit at all in hypertension, that he had a patient who had hypertension, told him that he got his blood pressure down by eating garlic. So the doctor fashioned a research project. This was published in the British Medical Journal, in which he gave a half teaspoon of kitchen garlic daily to a patient and observed no reduction in the blood pressure. So he concluded from that garlic had no benefit for people who had hypertension. I wrote a letter to the editor of the British Medical Journal and said, I have read the journal for many decades, respect it very highly, and I have some counsel for you. In the future, when you're going to publish an article on foods or herbs and their influence on disease, get an herbalist or a person who understands the properties of plants and let them fashion a proper project. What you gave was less than a homeopathic dose, and it was kitchen garlic, and who knows when kitchen garlic grew in the ground? Was it last year or was it a decade ago? nobody knows. And were the active principles still active, or were they long since out of commission because of age? So you may not know whether to believe what you read in the medical literature concerning herbs and foods. Onion, because of quercetin, has antiplatelet stickiness factors. With garlic, it is allein or allicin, and both names apply to this active principle. Ginger, very good. It also has anti-inflammatory properties, anti-nausea properties. Don't forget that one. It's also good for the nausea and vomiting of pregnancy or morning sickness, a very good one. Purple or red grape juice, and it has a substance in it that is anticoagulant. That is an anticoagulant. What's the name of that? What's the name of it? We've been over it. I'm not going to grade you, but I do want you to learn what we're talking about. What's the name of it? Yes, somebody's got part of it. Resveratrol. That's it. That's it, resveratrol. And it is a very effective anticoagulant from red or purple grapes. Curcumin, which comes from a kitchen spice. Which one? Does anybody know? That's right. It comes from turmeric. Curcumin. And I really meant to write turmeric, but I wrote the active ingredient, the active principle, which is called curcumin. And ginger can be taken by capsule. You can buy it from a health food store and take it in a capsule. Or you can grate the fresh ginger. It's also very good. Good use making tea from regular ginger, and it's extremely good for babies with nausea or for adults with nausea and to prevent motion sickness. So will mint oil prevent or cure motion sickness. Just get the little bottles of the mint oil that you can buy from a grocery store that's used in the kitchen, and tilt the bottle and wet the finger and lick that off the finger. I always feel a little funny when I tell people to lick something off the finger, because I do teach people who are giving out papers, don't lick and then give that to somebody, because you might have something that you could pass on. It's a good way to make epidemics. And it's very easy to pass out papers without doing that. You just, with a little bit of practice, you can bend them this way, hold this side and turn that side loose, bend them again, and pretty soon you've got it so you can just peel them off with your thumb just as fast or faster than you can if you lick your thumb, which is bad on both sides. Bad for you and bad for them. That's not in the cardiology lecture, but although if you were passing viruses around, there are certain viruses that do attack the myocardium and make a big problem for you. Then tomatoes and all red fruits and vegetables. So that's anything that's red has lycopene in it with very good antiplatelet stickiness factors. Soybeans have an antiplatelet stickiness factor, and it is potentiated by certain processing, and when it is purified, it's called natokinase, and I have found that to be a very good anticoagulant. Now, some herbs with anticoagulant, and I haven't mentioned all the foods by any means, but principally, they are limited to fruits and vegetables, some to whole grains and some other things, but they are not present for the most part. None of these principles are present in animal products. And so if you are really earnest in treating a certain disorder, you may not have room in your diet for any other kind of food except fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, and seeds. Now the herbs, ginkgo, hawthorn berry, ginseng, white willow bark or white willow, any part of the tree, Oregon grape, and a number of others that are in that same family. Nettles, feverfew, boswellia, and aloe vera. Aloe vera is in the garlic and onion family, or the lily family, and is very good for a number of things. Onion, garlic, aloe vera, all very fine properties to fight disease. And I totally overlooked these for the first 20 or 30 years that I practiced medicine. And I'm very sorry for that. I think I could have been a better physician if I had known these a lot earlier. But research has been slow on these herbs, and that has been a sorrow to me that we didn't have more research that could help us to know a lot about these herbs. Now, some other anticoagulants. Keep the blood levels low of homocysteine, cholesterol, triglycerides, sugar, protein. Some of these names you know. How many of you have ever heard the name homocysteine before this week? Okay. What if I'd asked you this question 10 years ago? Would you have known then? No, you would not have known then, because we had had no research on it at that time to let us know that it is a marker. It's a signal. Here is the potential for a disease. Which diseases? Well, heart attacks, strokes, cancer, Alzheimer's, all of those we know for sure, and probably most of the chronic degenerative diseases are related to a high homocysteine level. We'll have a bit more to say about that unless I get too wordy. You know, all of these things are so interesting to me that I tend to overdo my explanations to you. Maybe you aren't quite so interested in these things as I am. Now, some supplements, the natokinase from soybeans, vitamin E. Don't overdo the vitamin E. 200 IU per day is probably enough for most everybody. And when we get up to 400, 600, 800, or 1200, that's too much. Bear in mind that the daily requirement is only about 6. Not 600, but just 6. So we don't need a lot. My general rule on supplements, if you're just supplementing for nutrient value, is no more than the recommended daily allotment. So 60 milligrams of vitamin C, since 60 milligrams of vitamin C is what our daily recommended daily allotment is. And so I usually don't prescribe more than that. But there is, what was his name, who was a twice Nobel Prize winner who lived to be 90, and Linus Pauling recommended 10 to 12, was it 1,000? Milligrams, and when he was about 60, and he was talking in that way, I said, I'll bet he doesn't live long, and then he lived to be 90. I had to pull in my horns a bit on that one. Yes. He might not have followed his own advice. It's possible. And then we have NAC or N-acetyl L-cysteine. That also has very good anticoagulant properties. L-arginine and polycosanol from sugarcane. I always liked that when I grew up in South Georgia, where sugarcane syrup was really a table delicacy, and most everybody had it growing in the yard or in the field, and we made our own syrup, and I knew it had good properties in it. It was just too good not to have something really good on it. Okay, here is the Yuchi Pines pyramid, and you will notice that fats are at the top with olives, avocado, seeds, nuts, and dairy substitutes. Then come the protein foods, beans, peas, meat substitutes, and next the fuel foods, cereals, rice, potatoes, and pasta. But the foundation of the food pyramid is fruits, vegetables, and natural sweets, such as bananas and apples and oranges. Those are what we can, and dried fruits, those can be used as natural sweets. And the more we use these, the better it is. We should, for the most part, stay away from those sweet things. Even if you've paid for them, don't pay twice. Just pay once, and don't eat them, and you've only had to pay once. Now, here is the USDA food guide pyramid, and notice that it also has fats up here, but then come dairy, and then fruits, and then grains, down at the bottom, which here represents the base. But I think that fruits and vegetables should dominate what the menu and not grains, although I'm a great believer in whole grains. And whole grains should be all that we serve. We should not serve the white. If you serve a white grain, let it be more like twice in a lifetime and not daily. Maybe a wedding cake might be made out of white flour, but the rest of the time, use whole grains. They are packed with all kinds of beneficial nutrients that will keep disease away from your door. So yes, we want to use the whole grains. Now, I'm very happy about this was redone in 1992, and I'm actually very happy about this because it used to be that down here were dairy products and meat, right down here, and eggs, and it made the foundation. And so we have made some improvement, and as time goes by, I notice that there is more and more improvement in this. So I'm very happy for that. Now, the unsaturated fatty acids are anti-mutagenic. What is mutagenic? Means a division in cells in an abnormal way, because it mutates or it changes from one form to another. And mutations in biology are uniformly deleterious to the individual. Now, somebody's going to say, but what about Shasta daisies? The way we got the little bitty daisy from out in the field that will hardly draw your attention to it into the beautiful Shasta daisy that we have today was by inducing mutations. And that made the beautiful Shasta daisy. So isn't that better? Well, plant a Shasta daisy beside a wild daisy and see how long the Shasta daisy lasts. It can only be grown in cultivation. You cannot grow it in the wild because it's not strong enough to withstand the stresses that a wild daisy can withstand. Same kind of thing happens in our bodies. When we have a mutation, it is uniformly deleterious to us. So we don't want mutations. But now notice these very nice foods here. What is that? Flaxseed, that, walnuts, almonds, olives, this is olive oil, pine nuts, pecans. All of these are unsaturated fatty acids, and they are anti-mutagenic. They can protect the genetic material in our cells from damage caused by destructive rays. Very good. But notice this. When these protective unsaturated fatty acids are heated above 150 degrees centigrade, or about 302 degrees Fahrenheit, somebody figured out for me, not only do they lose their protective effects, but they become mutation-causing themselves. So we've got a problem when we heat these polyunsaturated fats. They're good for us when they are unheated, but when they get heated, they change so that they are not good for us anymore. Now some linoleic acid deficiency symptoms: high triglycerides, blood pressure, sticky platelets, tissue inflammation, edema, dry skin, mental deterioration, low metabolic rate, and some kinds of immune dysfunction, all from a deficiency of certain essential amino acids. So we need amino acids. So where can we get them? Do we need to add canola oil or even good flax oil or some other oil to our food and cook with these or bake with these? And the answer is no, we can get all we need from nuts and seeds and beans and grains, which are all high in essential fatty acids. They are very temperamental. Light and air and heat can destroy them, so we have to protect them very carefully. They are very stable in the nut or the seed itself, provided we don't expose them to, we don't crack the grain or the and make flour or cracked grain. As long as it's a whole unit, then we do quite well with these. You should grease. You should keep grease out of your food. It defiles any preparation of food you make. That's from volume 2, page 63, for those of you who have these books. We do not think fried potatoes are helpful, for there is more or less grease or butter used in preparing them. What is grease? Well, it's any unctuous, stiff fat, such as Crisco or butter or margarine. This is grease. And animal fat used in cooking is also a grease. Now, trans fatty acids. All fatty acids occur in the cis form in nature, but when we begin to do something to them, such as heating or grinding or whatever, then they change to trans fatty acids, which are not as beneficial to us. And it was really a great temptation to me not to give you the chemical formulas of these cis and trans and show you their spatial relationships. But if you want to know that, you'll have to write to me and I'll send you a copy of the material that I'm presenting to you and also material that I did not present to you today. Heating the oils above 120 degrees Fahrenheit causes other toxic substances to form other than those that we know, such as, or that we are very familiar with, such as the trans fatty acids. And you will notice that many packages today will say no trans fatty acids. I do not believe that we can trust that, because who knows just how high all batches of a certain product went through at the time that it was being manufactured. So I'm not highly impressed with that, although it's maybe a bit of a comfort, but maybe it's false comfort. Okay, other concerns for overheating oils. Proteins turn into carcinogenic acrolein, and benzopyrene is also made from, that's what happens when you barbecue or grill meats. The fat falls on the flame and makes benzpyrene and methylcholanthrene and others. And then the glycotoxins. Now, what glycotoxin do you know? This is a test. It's an examination. What glycotest do you know? Remember from yesterday? AGEs. What does that stand for? Advanced glycation end products. Well, you probably hadn't heard about that until yesterday, had you? And it's a rather new bit of research. We've known a little bit about it for a while. We've known that burned carbohydrates were not good for us, and that burned toast is not charcoal, but just scorched food. And the scorched food should always be recycled. Don't eat that. That's it's time to recycle it when it's burned. Toast and so forth, those can be a problem for us. Soy and heart disease. More than 40 studies have shown that replacing all or part of the animal protein in the diet with soy protein significantly lowers LDL cholesterol. So those who struggle with LDL, high LDL, can take a word of wisdom from that and take a little bit of soy. About 30 years ago, a man told me that if people would take a little bit of soy beans, just about a quarter of a cup every day, that they would never die of a heart attack or cancer. He just finished building a house, himself, and he is 90 years old now. He did have a helper for some of the heavy work, but he himself was the contractor at 90 years of age. And he has buried all of his brothers and sisters and wife and several of his children. The effects are greatest in people with moderate to severely high cholesterol. When soybeans are a part of the diet, low in fat and saturated fat, then cholesterol will be lowered by that. Now, in 1995, the New England Journal of Medicine combined the results of 38 clinical studies on protein's effect from soybeans. Decreased cholesterol by 9.3%, decreased LDL cholesterol 12.9%, triglycerides 10.5%, and HDL cholesterol was increased by 2.4%. So soybeans are very good for us. Now notice here a coronary artery. Here is a plaque in a coronary artery. Now I'd like you to notice this. You see a little line of cells going around here? This little line, and in the interior of this blood vessel, you will see these cells. They are called endothelial cells. Remember that name because you'll be reading about this in health journals and in the newspaper, in the health page. Endothelium is a big component of artery disease, and we want to keep the endothelium pliable. And when you read about something that will keep the endothelium elastic and pliable, you want to let your ears perk up on that because it's an important point. And you want to be careful that you understand that. Here is the cholesterol, the plaque, and when this plaque gets really well developed, then all of this portion here will simply rupture and ulcerate, somewhat like a boil erupting. Then you have a serious problem. You have two things. One is inflammation, and the other is you've got something particulate in the blood. You've got some particles in the blood that can go somewhere and lodge somewhere and cause some damage. Now, because these plaques develop, they cause inflammation. You can get a test, and this is an examination to you, you can get a test that will measure, that will be a marker for hardening of the arteries, severe hardening of the arteries. What is the name of that test? C-reactive protein. You made 100 on this test. C-reactive protein, and you should be, in my opinion, you should get that as a part of your normal physical examination every year. The lab test with C-reactive protein goes up as inflammation goes up. So as these plaques develop, your C-reactive protein will go up because they get more and more inflamed as they develop. CRP. CRP is for C-reactive protein. So you can just ask the lab, do a CRP. Now, many studies have shown that if you bask in a beautiful scene with sunlight and fresh air, it's very helpful to you. So if I have made you stressed by some things that I have said, maybe this scene will help you to relax a bit. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, every tree, and which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for food. This we had as our prescription for our diet from the very beginning. Now, here, doesn't that look attractive and very... This makes you hungry all over again, doesn't it? Now let's take some of garlic's effect on cholesterol and triglyceride. Initially, people who were tested had this, and they took 4 cloves of garlic every day. A clove is about the size of the end of your fifth finger, and the results of their cholesterol and triglycerides, LDL and VLDL. VLDL is more irritating and damaging to arteries than the LDL even. So we want to keep the VLDL under 15. And you might make a note of that because the laboratory will give you a higher value as being normal, but it's only average American. And we want to be better than that. And then the HDL are the percent of the total. So let's just notice the fourth month after taking 4 cloves a day, serum cholesterol went, looks as if that one went up a little bit. Serum triglycerides, 165, LDL and VLDL, 84% of the total, and HDL, 16% of the total. By the eighth month, the cholesterol was down to 235, serum triglycerides from 170 to 120, and the LDL and VLDL, 72% of the total, and HDL, 28%. So we want the HDL, do we want it to go up or down? We want it to go up, and it did. We want the LDL and VLDL to go down, and it did. And the serum triglycerides, we want that to go down, and it did. They did. And the serum cholesterol went down. So just taking 4 cloves of garlic per day. Ooh, but you'd have to stay home, wouldn't you? Couldn't meet the public with that much garlic. Well, you can get... The interesting thing is that as people use a lot of garlic for a longer period of time, the liver begins to be able to metabolize it better, and the odor on the breath goes down. And so a lot of people who are taking an enormous amount of garlic every day, raw and cooked, you can hardly smell it on their breath at all. What about the capsules and the chiolic? You can take that as well. Those are also effective. Now let's study a bit about oxidized cholesterol, which is the most injurious form of cholesterol. And it can be oxidized outside of the body or on the inside. Some of the ways that it's oxidized inside: by insufficient antioxidants. What are antioxidants? They slow down the aging process. Where do we get them? I'll show you in a moment. The action of free radicals is interrupted by antioxidants. And the free radical, the production of free radicals by heat on polyunsaturated fatty acids is also helped by getting enough antioxidants. Excessive iron and other minerals can oxidize cholesterol. Too much iron is a pro-oxidant. We've studied that also in this class. A pro-oxidant is a substance that accelerates the rate at which we age. So what are some antioxidants? Well, some important ones, these are not all, but some are carotenoids. They, as you would expect, are yellow, and they also come in dark green vegetables as well, such as the leafy greens and other dark green vegetables and fruits. Vitamin D, and don't get that from a pill, get it from the sun, because there are other benefits from sunlight. Sunlight's actually touching the skin. Does that mean that you need to have a totally bare skin in order to get proper sun? No, you can get certain rays of the sun, which do potentiate vitamin D in the skin, from being fully clothed as well. Some of the rays of the sun actually penetrate the skin, the muscle, and into the deep tissues. Then selenium, glutathione, and vitamin C, all of these are antioxidants, and there are many others. Yes? Can you get vitamin D early in the morning? Yes, you can if the sun is actually shining. You can get that. Now, on a cloudy day, you can also get some vitamin D. There are rays of the sun that are quite capable of, and every day, there are certain rays of the sun that come right down to earth. Now, excessive iron, we've touched that already, and I won't go into that anymore. Let's go on to homocysteine. Homocysteine, what is it? Well, it's a metabolite of the amino acid methionine, which we get from our food. It's a good amino acid, nothing wrong with it. The big problem comes if we do not have enough of certain vitamins to cause the methionine to make its full transition from methionine into cysteine. And then it hangs at an intermediary chemical called homocysteine, which is the irritating substance in this. As the levels go higher, they damage the blood vessels, and you need to keep the level under 11 for sure. And there are some, this is rather new, so nobody yet knows for certain exactly how low it should be, but for certain under 11, and maybe even under 9. It appears to be the lower the better on this, on homocysteine. Can impair endothelial function, leading to spasm of vessels and poor relaxation. What is the endothelium? The lining of blood vessels, all of them. Even our lymph vessels are lined by endothelium. And if the endothelium becomes stiff or irritated or has imbibed fats, then it is not going to be able to give you a nice blood vessel. It's also associated, homocysteine is associated with cancer and Alzheimer's and certain other disease. How do we get it? Well, by a lack of folic acid, B6, and B12. So if you have a high level, get these three vitamins, B6, B12, and folic acid. Where do we get folic acid from? I'd like one word, not the drugstore, but one. Greens. That was where it was first described. In fact, folic acid from foliage, do you see? So it gets its name from where it's from leaves. So eat the leaves. We need that. Okay. How much do we need? It's enough to bring the homocysteine down, and if I had a high level in about 4 or 5 months, I would get a repeat level and make sure you are taking enough. And I would say maybe 200 micrograms per day would probably be enough, but you may not be able to get tablet or a pill that's that low, but you usually can get B12 in a liquid form and just take a small dose. We don't know any problem with too much vitamin B12, but I'm a little fearful of too much vitamin B12. The little red pills that you put under your tongue, those are fine. Mm-hmm. Those are good. How much B6? I think it's, Becky, do you remember, is it 400 or 200 or is it 50? 50? Okay, it's about 50. And of the folic acid, that's 200 to 400. Yeah, okay. But often you can get these three in one preparation that may say something like, homocysteine fighter or corrector, may even have the name on the package. All right, let's go. Yes. Are they from animal products? No. No, they should be from a plant sources, including the B12. B12 is cultured in a laboratory with B12, the germs that can produce it are cultured in a laboratory, and then it is simply harvested from the fluid that they are grown in. So it doesn't, they don't harvest it from an animal. but rather from a medium in the factory. In the Framingham study, those who had levels of 15 or above were three times as likely to have a heart attack compared to those who had 9 or below. Now, avoid caffeine, and we could talk the rest of the year on reasons why you should not take caffeinated beverages. And I will only give you this one, and that is that it tends to make your homocysteine go up, and it will raise your blood pressure and your cholesterol and raise your stress level. So all of those are good reasons to leave off coffee. And what deficiency does coffee supply for you? Can you think of one? What deficiency does coffee supply? Okay, gives you water, but it takes out more than it gives you because it is a diuretic also. Is it a good diuretic? No, it's not a good diuretic because it poisons the kidney in the process. A little, not a lot, but a little bit, yes? It has tannic acid. It has also homogenticic acid in it also. So we want to avoid it. It has many reasons why we need to avoid it. And my husband and I wrote a little book a few years ago on the evils of caffeinated beverages. And the publisher gave it the name Poison with a Capital C. one of the printers wanted to name it The Brown Drinks, which he thought had a bad connotation. What about decaffeinated? Most of the studies that have been done with coffee and its ability to produce cancer were done on decaffeinated coffee. So even decaffeinated, we cannot condone. The statement was made that the decaffeinated is worse than the regular, and you may be right that it is worse than the regular. Green tea. What about green tea? One of the best sources of antioxidants known. Now let me bring out the same reasoning that I brought out yesterday, that one of the very best sources, the best source of plant protein is tobacco. So just because it has one good thing does not mean that we can accept its freight of bad things that come along with on the same train. The green tea then would not be good. Herb teas are all right, yes. Most of them, yes. Let me talk with you about that one privately. I'm going to have to do a little research on that one. Okay, so we've got some causes of homocysteine. Let me encourage you to write down our website. I don't know if my email is on that or not. I gave you my email yesterday, amthrash@uchipines.org, and I open up my private email about once a month, but this one is opened daily. So you might get a response from this one. You probably won't from my regular one. Okay, hypertension defined. The American College of Cardiologists says 140 over 90. Anything above that is hypertension. The National Institutes of Health came out a couple of years ago saying that that was a little too high, that it shouldn't be any more than 130 over 85. But UChipines has for many years, in fact, during most of our history, we have said that 120 over 80 was the upper limit of ideal blood pressure. And it is a fact that with every 10-point elevation of your systolic, your likelihood of getting a stroke increases by 15%. So between 120 and 130, your likelihood of getting a stroke is 15% greater. Even at 100, If your systolic is 100, between 100 and 110, your likelihood of getting a stroke is 15% higher at 110 than it was at 100. Now, admittedly, at either 100 or 110, the stroke level is very low. But it is higher by 15% between those two. So it holds at almost every level that 10 milligrams, milligrams of millimeters of mercury higher, it is going to be 15% higher stroke risk. What is the relationship of diastolic to stroke? It depends usually on associated problems that one has with the diastolic and stroke levels. Okay? Now, notice this. Accepted levels, if you call high blood pressure always at 140, anything above 140 over 90, then normal, high normal would be 130 over 85 and normal up to 120 over 80, but optimal below 120 over 80. And that will help you to get some idea as to what you are aiming for. So aim at the lowest level that you can get. Yes.
Is it hard on your body for your blood pressure to go up?
Is it hard on the body for the blood pressure to go up and down? No, it is hard on the body for your weight to go up and down, but not for the blood pressure. The blood pressure, we can tolerate a high blood pressure. In fact, with exercise, the blood pressure goes up. With lifting a heavy weight, the blood pressure goes up. It's not particularly injurious unless you have already diseased arteries. Now, let's notice this. Can your blood pressure be too low? Can it go too low? Okay, that's a trick question. Can it go too low? Some are saying this and some are saying this. And I agree with those who are shaking the head no, because your blood pressure can't really go too low. Your pulse pressure can. Pulse pressure can. So you need to know what pulse pressure is. That's the difference between the systolic and the diastolic. That's called the pulse pressure. And if that falls below 20, you are having less and less good circulation, because circulation is the difference, is caused by the difference in the high and the low blood pressure. That's what makes it flow, makes blood flow. But whether the blood pressure, whether a rock falls 5 feet at 5,000 feet elevation or falls 5 feet at sea level, it's still 5 feet. And it's still an effective fall. It's the same thing with blood pressure. Your circulation will be just as good at 50 over 30 as it is 120 over 100, do you see? Still, the pulse pressure is 20. And it can change throughout the day. And what if your blood pressure is 130 over 120? Is it an effective circulation? No, the person is in cardiovascular collapse, even though the systolic is at 130. So it's the difference between the two. A lot of people are very concerned about their blood pressure if they find that it's 85 or 90 over 50. Oh, that's too low. And they may even have symptoms. Well, that's why I'm weak. Probably not. The person is probably weak because the hydration went down rather than that the blood pressure is low. Now, if a person is normally at 120 over 80 and then one day it's 50 over 30, you need to find out why. That's a drop that we don't usually get. Okay, let's continue. And they tell me that I'm not supposed to take questions now. So would you do me a favor and write your questions down? We'll take a little bit more time today for questions than previously. Okay, we've discussed that. Causes of hypertension in the elderly, systolic blood pressure may go up due to hardening of the arteries, diminished nerve sensitivity, reduced nitrous oxide production. Where is nitrous oxide produced? In the blood vessel itself. I thought I told you that yesterday. I must not have. It is produced inside the blood vessel itself, which causes a relaxation of the blood vessel. When the blood vessel relaxes, its muscle is of such a nature that it dilates a bit, and that gives a little more room for the blood, which lets the pressure go down, do you see? And so we need relaxed blood vessels. People who are tense and under a lot of stress, their blood vessels contract. One of the reasons for that is that the nitrous oxide production in the blood vessel is diminished by stress. It is also increased by exercise. So one of the ways that exercise neutralizes tension is in this axis, having to do with the relaxation of the blood vessel and the production of that very important substance right here. Decreased connective tissue elasticity and endothelial elasticity. Increased stresses, of course, this means life changes. Some of these can be changes for the better. Anybody ever had a wedding in your family that everybody was looking forward to? Not stressful, is it? Well, the women wouldn't say that it was not stressful. They would say that it was very stressful. In fact, if it is as stressful as the wedding in your family that is to somebody that you didn't want your family member to marry. They're both stressful. Usually given about the same amount of stress level by those who study stresses. So if you have something that even though, and a vacation, what about a vacation? Is a vacation stress less? Well, it can be if you take it at home by your own, in your own woods, but if you go away from home, it's probably going to be a little stressful, isn't it? And so we should take warning. Anything that's stressful in your life should be balanced by exercise. So exercise neutralizes tension. Let's say that all together. Exercise neutralizes tension. Very good. Wrong eating habits, too much, too frequently, and of junk foods, that causes hypertension. Okay, now what is the aftermath of hypertension? Well, a lot of things, but I have listed here a few. Stroke, aneurysm, heart attack, retinal disease, kidney disease, hardening of the arteries or atherosclerosis, congestive heart failure, and a weakened memory and mental ability. These are all aftermaths of hypertension. So as well as we can, we want to keep the blood pressure down. Now this last one, weakened memory and mental ability, some have believed that that may be because of medications that patients take that causes some increase in mental deterioration. And it makes diabetes worse. If you have diabetes and hypertension, then your likelihood of having diabetic neuropathy or diabetic nephropathy increases greatly, and atherosclerosis associated with that. And notice this, the blood pressure and the incidence of sudden death. The annual incidence in 1,000 persons, notice how it goes up, and if it's above 160, then it goes up to 74.5 people per 1,000 individuals tested. And here is blood pressure and kidney disease. Again, notice when it's above about 160, notice how much of an increase it is. So those that are under 160, they're at a much greater advantage than when it goes over 160. So with these studies, it appears that the 160 level begins to be the real pay attention level. Now with the quality of life, as the blood pressure goes up, so does the reduction in the quality of life. Now, let's just notice a 3 millimeter decrease in systolic blood pressure, a sustained 3 millimeter decrease, 11% fewer strokes, 7% fewer coronaries, and 5% fewer deaths from all causes. So it's worth your while to work on keeping your blood pressure down. And when do you start checking yourself for high blood pressure? If your family is a family of hypertensives, get your own blood pressure cuff yourself. Have it as a part of your own personal equipment. Have it at home and frequently take your blood pressure. By frequently, I mean at once a month or once every quarter or once a year, depending on how old you are. If you are 20 years old, no need to take it more than about once a year. But if you're 70 years old, you probably ought to take it about once a month, and especially if you're from a family of hypertensives. Now, notice this about sun baths. Sun baths will lower your blood pressure 8% just alone, and when combined with exercise, the blood pressure can be lowered 15% just by that. After a sun bath, the strength of the heart is steadied and deepened. Pulse rate is lowered. Heart muscle pumps more blood with each beat, and the heart rests more between beats. Cardiac output is increased up to 39% for several days. How long the exercise? Or is the sun bath? It depends on how fair you are. If you're very fair with blue eyes, and especially if you have freckles, probably 10 minutes, a 6-inch patch of skin exposed per day is enough. That would be just about the face for 10 minutes in a day. That might be enough. The darker your skin, the greater the amount of time required. For persons who are black, they may need 30 minutes or 45 minutes in order to get the same amount of benefit from the sun. Dr. Wynn Horsley, who is the physician in chief at UT Pines, did a nice little study in which he put a number of patients in the sun, and he gave them exposures of 15 to 20 minutes. And he found in this project that the blood pressure readings were 10 to 20 points lower after the sunlight exposure, and the lower levels were sustained as long as 6 hours. So it was a very good graphic illustration to all of us that just sunning can be very helpful for hypertensives. And that's to say nothing of the many, many other good benefits that come from getting sun. Even with a sunscreen, you can get benefits with the blood pressure. You may not get it with the vitamin D production. Okay, what are some things that cause hypertension or that you should do if you have hypertension? Reduce your salt and sugar, cheese, and I would say to eliminate cheese. The more I study cheese, the more I am convinced that it is wholly unfit for the human stomach. Wholly unfit. And I urge you to leave it off. Overeating, coffee and its relatives, concentrated sweeteners, and stimulants. That can be coffee or caffeinated beverages, and vinegar, and various hot spices. These are all stimulants. Foods that lower blood pressure. This is so nice to know that there are foods that will lower your blood pressure. You remember we have talked about foods that will help to balance your thyroid function so that we don't produce too much thyroid hormone. Is it wrong to produce too much? Yes, too much makes our flame burn hotter. If your flame burns hotter, it's likely to burn out quicker, isn't it? So we want the Lord provided for us not to have an overactive thyroid by giving us a lot of foods that have a thyroid-inhibiting quality so that we won't get too much thyroid hormone. Same thing is true with the adrenals. But that we can get enough, we have certain foods that are stimulatory. Oatmeal, a little stimulatory to the thyroid. So if we, in the morning, we eat the oatmeal, get a little stimulus to the thyroid. Then at noontime, we eat the soybeans, and they are inhibiting to the thyroid just at the time when we need to have the thyroid inhibited just a little bit. Gets us ready to have a good night of sleep. Celery, carrots, garlic, onion, apples, tomatoes, and all members of the cruciferous family, such as broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, kale, collards, turnips, radishes, kohlrabi, large number spinach, large number of members of the cruciferous vegetable family. All of them good for cancer as an anti-cancer agent and good for the blood pressure. It's nice to know this, isn't it? Therefore, we can fashion a diet depending on what we need. And people with high blood pressure are often from the same families that have a high incidence of cancer. So we can use these vegetables to fashion a diet that will be good for them both. Okay, herbs that lower blood pressure. Tarragon, you can grow this yourself in your own garden. It grows easily. Basil, you grow that in your own garden. I don't know about oregano. I have not grown that. Fennel grows easily in your own garden. Valerian causes an increase in GABA. Hawthorn, it's a principle that dilates arterioles. Kudzu, and you can gather your kudzu in the woods, right, in my son's woods. He'd like it if you did. You can gather the leaves and dry them and make a tea. It's good for the blood pressure. You can also dig up the roots, and the roots can get to be enormous. You know, as big as a large basketball. So they are, and they are, but don't forget that these are foods. They are foods. So if you're ever caught, if you are ever lost in the woods without food, and you're in a forest that has kudzu infesting it as an aggressive weed, you're in luck because the kudzu is very nourishing. The Koreans take the root and eat it in many ways, and it's very nourishing. It tastes like potatoes. And you can get, you can also get the Smilax. Are you familiar with that vine called sawbriar? It grows here. And it's a nuisance in the woods because it hangs your toe and you go sprawling because it, or it saws across your stockings and ruins your stockings. And it is also highly nourishing and very good for the blood pressure. And in the early spring, the little tender shoots, you couldn't ask for a better salad addition than the little tender shoots of the smilax. And that inhibits their growth and makes it so that they're not quite such a nuisance. They also have a tuber. It will not become your favorite vegetable, but it is nourishing and it will keep you alive if you're caught in the woods. Now some lifestyle changes. Four simultaneous lifestyle changes were found to reduce blood pressure nicely. Weight reduction, low salt diet, alcohol reduction, and increased exercise. I am not just talking to the choir when I say decreased alcohol. You remember yesterday we identified certain lifestyle factors that can make you a factory for alcohol. You remember those? Eating between meals? Eating too great a variety at a meal, eating too much, drinking a lot of fluids with your meals, that makes you more likely to produce alcohols. What kind of alcohol? The nicer beverage alcohol, like ethyl? No, but the more toxic ones like methyl. And combination of sugar and milk. not good at all. It helps you to make these alcohols. Yes. And so we need to pay attention to these things. If you will read Counsels on Diet and Foods and learn the principles in it, you will know more practical digestive physiology than any physician you know who has not read the same material. So it's a wonderful book. If you do not have that book, if you have not read it, Counsels on Diet and Foods, get the book and read it.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright 2007, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.